Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is wonderful to have you company for another episode of the show. Now, if you're a first-time listener, welcome. It's really great to have you here. And if you've been around the block a few times with us, welcome back. It's wonderful to have you here as well. Now, before we get into the show itself, I am going to just let you know that Apple has shaken things up with the way that they're doing their podcasts. And what has happened with this shakeup is some people have reported they're not getting to see podcasts the way that they would have been used to. And we've had some people going, where's your podcast? Why have you not released it? When in fact we have. So if you're an Apple listener, what I'm going to ask you to do is to go to the podcast player app on your phone. And I'm going to ask you to go to the top right-hand corner and click follow. And what that's going to mean is you're never going to miss an episode again. It's going to be there in your feed, ready to go. So all you do, as I said, go to the top right-hand corner of the screen, click follow, and that'll make sure that the podcast comes to you and you're not missing out on any of the stuff that's going to help you grow your practice. Now, while we're on the topic of things that are going to help you grow your practice, I want to introduce you to our sister publication called The Savvy Dentist Magazine. The Savvy Dentist Magazine is designed to give you all the resources from relevant experts in the industry to help you grow your practice and take it to the next level of success, whatever that may mean for you. So in the magazine, we talk about a whole bunch of different things. We're going to talk about the latest around tax and accounting. We're going to be talking about HR and getting your HR strategy right, how to recruit the right people, retain them, and so on. We're going to be talking about getting your legals right. We're going to be talking about getting your marketing right. We're going to be talking about disruption in dentistry. We're going to be talking about getting your IT structures right and a whole lot more, you know, fit outs and everything, right? So if you want to grow your practice, if you want to scale your practice, then please go ahead and subscribe to the magazine. It's totally free. All you need to do is head across to savvydentist.com/magazine. And whether you want a digital copy or whether you want a print copy, you choose whichever one is free and we'll get it into your hot little hands so that you can grow and scale your practice and achieve the goals that are really important for you. Now, on this particular episode today, there's a really important topic I'd like to touch on, and that is control. And there's a second topic I'd like to talk on as well, and that is how we measure success. So we might talk a little bit about how control can serve us, but how it can also hinder us to start the conversation. So one of the things I know about dentists is we are either all typically control freaks or recovering control freaks. Now, it'd be a really interesting study to try and figure out, but I think most dentists are born with that kind of type A perfectionistic type of personality. And if you don't have that personality, you probably either develop it or perhaps you don't last as a dentist because, you know, when you're dealing with, you know, precision work like dentistry, having that attention to detail, that perfectionistic tendency is critical to achieving great clinical outcomes. And when you're operating in that environment, typically you want to exert high levels of control over everything that you do because you're striving to create the best possible outcome for your patient. Now, in a clinical setting, that makes so much sense. Yeah, obviously it does. But in a business sense, that can be a real handbrake. And what we've noticed in business is your desire for control can actually slow down growth. And the expression is your ability to grow and scale your practice is inversely proportional to your desire for control. In other words, if you desire control too much, it just slows you down in your business growth and your ability to create time for yourself and to create the results you're seeking. So let's talk a little bit about control. And I thought it might be useful just to start with a couple of questions. And of course, when we're doing some questions like we're about to do or answering questions like we're about to, I wanted to stress that for any progress to be made, we need to begin by telling the truth. And the person that needs to hear the truth most of all is usually ourselves, right? The person we kid ourselves, the person we con, the person we fib to is usually ourselves. We're, yeah, no, it's all good, we're fine. And it might not be, okay? So my first caveat as we go through this exercise is to say, to thine own self be true. Just answer the questions. You don't need to share the answers with anyone, but just have a really good moment of introspection and answer these questions really truthfully, because once we get those truthful answers, we then have a basis from which to move forward. So the first question I'm going to ask you is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how strong is your desire for control across various elements in your life? So, of course, we're not just talking about dentistry here or running a business. There's lots of elements in your life that you might be seeking control. Maybe it's your finances, maybe it's your relationships, maybe it's your physical environment, whatever it happens to be. And some of these will serve you and some of them won't. But just as a general rule, score out of 10, looking at all those different environments combined, how would you rate yourself in terms of your need for control? And so I think, yeah, just spend a moment thinking about that, reflecting on that, think about all the different elements of your life, and then just give yourself one score, I guess an aggregate score out of 10, and you can see where you're on that control scale. Now, I'm guessing that most people are going to rate themselves pretty highly in that score, as I said, for the reasons around dentistry, perfectionism, and so on. Now, if you've learned to run your business and you've been able to extricate yourself from day-to-day operations, maybe you've gone through a process of learning how to give up control, and it's great, and your score might be lower, and that's awesome. What we're going to talk about today is how do we learn to give up control constructively? But before we get to that, I want to ask you in your life, which areas of your life do you particularly seek control? Okay, and again, for some of those areas, it might be absolutely appropriate that you're in control all the way, because I'm not for a moment suggesting we just kind of, you know, enter into chaos and no planning or no structure. That's not what I'm getting at all. There are moments in your life, situations in your life, roles that you play in your life where it's absolutely appropriate for you to be in control and have high levels of control. But there are others where it may be less important. So think about the different elements of your life. Maybe it's your relationships. Maybe it's your physical environment. Maybe it's your finances. Maybe it's your business. Maybe it's your clinical work. Whatever it happens to be, what's your level of control in each of those areas? And where does it kind of, you know, really show its face for you? So for me, I can tell you that in my physical environment, I like to have high levels of control. I'm a very neat and orderly person. I like to have things orderly around me. For me, that just gives me a little bit of inner peace. And, you know, we can argue whether that's right or wrong, but that's just me. So for me, that's one area where I like to have high levels of control. There are other areas of my life where I'm a little more chaotic, and that's okay too. So whatever it is for you. Now, the follow-up question from that would be, in which areas of your life is that degree of control serving you? And which areas of your life is that degree of control hindering you? You know, is it a net positive or is it a net negative? And in some areas, as I said, it'll be absolutely really positive, but there'll be other areas of your life where you're kind of thinking, hang on a second, if I could release my grip on this a little bit, if I could kind of release my stranglehold on this sort of stuff, maybe I'd get a bit more breathing space. Maybe I'd have a bit more bandwidth to do other things. Whatever it might be for you, ask yourself, which of these areas of life is my desire for control helping me, or where is it hurting me? And that's the next question. And then what I'm going to ask you to do is to think about your business and to think about, well, what would be the upside? What would be the benefit in my life if I could strategically give up control in some elements of my business? You know, think about all the things where you have a really tight grip on things and think to yourself, where might it be advantageous for me to give up a little bit of control, and what might those advantages be for me? How would that show up? Maybe it's going to be, you know, a bit more free time. Maybe it's going to be getting out of work, you know, at a reasonable hour. Maybe it's, you know, getting home for dinner with the kids. Maybe it's just having a little less stress. Maybe it's just going to feel like I don't have to do it all. Because one of the things I know is lots of dentists use what I call an octopus style of management. And that means there's kind of one brain and eight arms directing everything, right? You've got your fingers in every single pie. And it can feel like that you're, you know, doing your job, but you're also overseeing every other job in the practice. And that's not only exhausting for you, but it's also demoralizing for your team, because they don't feel like they have your trust. And so we need to be able to create a sense of trust, and we need to be able to create a sense of confidence that allows you to be able to, you know, hand some things off where it's appropriate, but also not have to go and check in over time every single time and micromanage, because what's the point, right? And so let's talk a little bit how we hand over control for a second. So if you've identified those areas of your working life, at least, where it's advantageous to hand over a bit of control to someone else, we then need to think about, well, what does that look like? How do we actually go about doing that? And what would be a good result? So if you're happening to, you know, perform a particular task or a particular role, then clearly you have expertise around that task or that role. And the first thing to do is to capture that expertise in the form of a process or a system, or what I would call a standard operating procedure. And so we have a process of documenting that called the Speedy SOP. I just went through that recently with our coaching clients. And it's designed to take everything that's out of your head and get it onto a page. And that's going to then form the basis for how you hand over responsibility. So what we're talking about is the progressive handing over of responsibility, or the progressive release of responsibility. And to do that, we need a couple of things. Firstly, we need to have a process that someone else can, you know, follow. We've then got to write that first, right? So we take all the knowledge out of your head, we capture it into some format, whatever makes sense for you. We use this speedy SOP. And then what we're going to do is we're going to train and teach that. Now, the mistake that most people make in this is, rather than creating the asset or the SOP, is they tell someone what to do, you know, or they show someone what to do. And that person may pick it up or they may not, but a couple of things typically happen. The first thing that happens is we tell someone what to do, we walk away, job done, and we think, I've told them, they're going to go ahead and do it, right? And of course, we all know that sometimes that works, but a lot of the time, well, let's be honest, no, it doesn't. Or it doesn't work in the way that we want it to work, or to the same degree, or whatever it happens to be, right? So that's the first problem. The second problem, of course, is even if they get it spot on, then if they were to leave the practice, then that knowledge walks out the door when they walk out the door, and we then need to go through the process of training the next person, or even worse is we take it back ourselves, right? So we've got to create this asset or the standard operating procedure. It's also really important to remember that in a practice, if you have headaches, frustrations, bottlenecks, whatever it is, all of those things can be traced back somewhere to a deficiency of assets in your practice. Now, we talk about four types of assets. We talk about the intellectual property assets, which we're talking about here. We also talk about team assets. We also talk about database assets and physical assets. But the whole idea of an asset is you want to convert that asset into cash flow as efficiently as possible. But for this instance, we're talking about intellectual property in your business that allows you to document how you do something, so that the next step is to hand that over and have that progressive release of responsibility. So the way that we have the progressive release of responsibility is we need to firstly verify that the SOP that you've created is accurate. And so what we would do is we would take someone, we'd give them the SOP, and we sit with them, and I'm going to go through and do the SOP, and they're going to follow along. They're going to watch me do every single step. And if I do anything that's not documented, they've got to pull me up and say, hang on, what are you doing there? That's not on the page, and we need to adjust the SOP until it's perfect. But the process of handing over is a classic training process, which is I do it, we do it, you do it, you teach it. So initially, I'm going to sit with them, I'm going to do it, they're going to check my SOP is, you know, fit for purpose, they'll make any observations about where it might be deficient, and we adjust it. From there, we're going to do it together, so they're going to do it and I'm going to, you know, watch them do it and make sure that they're getting the same outcome that I get. And once they've demonstrated competence in that, they get to run with it on their own, so they get to do it. And then the final piece is where they teach someone else, so that there's an understudy, so there's always a second person in the practice that knows what to do. Yes, we've still got the SOP there, so in theory, they could just pick that up and go for it. But equally, if we have another person there that's at least experienced that SOP once or twice before, they know what to look for, they know how to do it, and they know what the outcome is all about. So we talk about having like a Noah's Ark approach to practice, which means a 2x2 approach. In other words, we don't just have one, we always have a backup. Or as Prince Harry would say, an heir and a spare, right? So we want to make sure there's always a spare person that knows what to do there in the case or in the situation where our primary person isn't able to do it, or is sick or away, or indeed leaves the practice. So that's how you give up control. Now, this is not just about delegating. Delegating is part of that. But when you're giving up control, you're giving over responsibility, not just for the task, but for the outcome. And I think this is really important. So as you delegate tasks, you've got to make sure that the actual role is set up to know what the objectives of that particular role are. What's success look like? You know, how do we set people up knowing, you know, you're not just doing a series of tasks, but we want you to be outcome focused and think about what you're trying to do. So sitting alongside these SOPs and tasks that we delegate is very clear scorecards for each role. We've got to make sure that if we're going to be giving over tasks to people, which we will, we also need to give the people on our team absolute clarity about what success looks like in their role. And that comes in the form of a scorecard. And the scorecard really has a couple of key components to it. One is and this is different to a position description, I should say. By all means, have your position description, but a scorecard is typically a one pager that sits with the position description, and a kind of 80-20 is the position description. But it starts with the overarching objectives of the role. And you know, each role might have two or three or four or five objectives. And then underneath those objectives, you're going to go, well, what metrics would need to be true, what measurables would need to be true for the objectives to be met. So, for example, one of the objectives for a receptionist might be making sure that the appointment book is full, right? And so one of the KPIs around that could be that every single person leaves with an appointment. So the rebooking rate is 100%, right? So that would be the metric, the rebooking rate. And then, of course, underneath those success metrics, we then need to have the activities, the priority activities, the critical activities, we call them critical drivers, that drive those KPIs. And so in that situation around the rebooking rate, it could be making sure we have a compelling reason conversation every single time with a patient so that they book in and keep coming back. So to be able to give up control, firstly, we need to be able to delegate tasks. The second thing we need to be able to do is to delegate outcomes and 80-20 someone's role so they've got clarity around the big picture objectives of the role, the key performance indicators that would indicate that the objectives have been met. And then underneath that, we would have the activities or the critical drivers that lead to those KPIs. And so when you get these two documents, you know, the SOPs and the scorecards working in concert, what happens is you now have a team that are crystal clear on what to do, what success looks like. They've got the tools on how to do it. And if you've got a great culture in your practice, they'll just get on and do it. And what that does is it gives you confidence to know that the team are working towards a common goal. It gives you confidence to know they understand their role in the common goal and how to go about it on a day-to-day basis, and a resource to go through the day-to-day activities to complete their tasks that ultimately lead to the common goal. So that's how you give up control in order to get freedom, because that's the trade-off. The more control you want, the less freedom you typically have. So that's something there to consider. Now, the second big topic I really wanted to talk today is about how we measure success. And again, tying back into the perfectionistic nature of dentists, I just want to tell a quick story. I remember many, many years ago, my wife's a dentist and she's tremendous and I'm a very, very lucky fellow. But I remember when we were courting, and courting is an old-fashioned word, dating is probably a better word, isn't it, to be a little more 21st century. But anyway, when we were dating, I came to Canberra and she was at work one day and I remember thinking, well, you know what, she's having a hard day at work. I'm going to take care of all the work around the house. So I literally did everything that day. We did the washing, did the ironing, had dinner ready to go, vacuumed the floors, like you name it, it was all done. Anyway, in Canberra at night, at that particular time of year, it's really important to pull your blinds down to keep the heat in and it doesn't get cold, right? And I'd forgotten to pull the blind down. The first thing that she saw was the blind up and yeah, she noticed what was wrong, right? And that's not to be critical of her, far from it. What I'm getting at is that as dentists, we have spent our entire working life noticing what doesn't look right. And in fact, that ability has been honed and honed and honed and honed. Now, the reason I bring this up is it's really important that as we're looking to measure our progress or measure our success, is we often focus on the things that aren't yet done rather than looking back on the success that we have had or the progress that we've made. And there's a wonderful book by Dan Sullivan called The Gap and the Gain. And the basic premise of the book is this, is that oftentimes we look at what's deficient, what's not yet been achieved or what hasn't gone right, and we forget to look backwards and see how far we've come. And I think if we're going to measure progress, it's really, really important to go, you know what, look how far we've come. Yes, we've got some things to do. Yes, we've got some things we need to fix. Yes, we've got some results we still are yet to achieve. But hey, can we just take a moment to celebrate the progress we have made? Now, the reason that's so important, A, is it just gives perspective. It gives you perspective around the fact that what you're doing is working. It gives you perspective around the fact that, you know, you're going okay. And it also creates confidence about moving forward into the future as well. Because if we constantly harp on what's not been done, A, what that does, it erodes confidence in ourselves, but it also erodes morale in the team. And that actually slows progress down. So if we want to be accelerating our progress, yes, let's be real about what still needs to be done. But let's also be real about what progress we have made and acknowledge that progress, give ourselves the necessary pats on the back, and also then reset as we move forward. So anyway, there's a couple of thoughts for you. I hope you find that really helpful. And I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Savvy Dentist Podcast. So that's it for me this week. Take good care. We'll see you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.